The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Raleigh News and Observer, the Triangle Gardener Magazine, the Garden Smart e-newsletter, and the National Gardening Association e-newsletter. And if we have time, maybe from Jerry Baker's terrific Garden Tonics. We'll start with the Raleigh News and Observer. This article is by Renee Elder. Make your chilly backyard more hospitable to critters. My neighbors, who are wildlife gardeners, recently lost several chickens they've been keeping in the backyard of our West Raleigh neighborhood near the Greenway. So far, members of the flock have been picked off by owls, a fox, a raccoon, and a couple of hawks, despite a reasonably secure hen house and near constant supervision. It seems some forms of urban wildlife have adapted well to living among us humans. When presented with the possibility of a meal, the hungry opportunist knows exactly how and when to strike. Researchers have documented the amazing ingenuity of some animals in acquiring their meals. Deer, raccoons, squirrels, and many other species have become adept at urban living. Raccoons are wily and persistent as they work to remove trash can lids and empty garbage pails, even those secured with heavy bungee cords. The crafty Barbados bullfinch can swoop down and pluck a sugar packet from a restaurant patio. And urban coyotes demonstrate how to stop, look, and wait for cars to pass before crossing busy intersections. From the human's perspective, sharing habitat with wildlife can be a nuisance and can even have deadly implications for chickens or small pets, as in my neighbor's case. But as the city of Oaks continues to shed significant amounts of trees, cover, and vegetation each year to development, I worry the region's wildlife will wind up as the biggest losers. At NC State University, researchers estimate that about 6.5 million acres of forested land in the state have been lost to development since 1982. NCSU's Going Native website describes certain animals that have suffered most, such as pileated woodpeckers, which need mature forests with tall trees to nest and hunt for their diet of insects. Other species edged out through development are those that require large, contiguous tracts of land for hunting, egg-laying conditions, or other migratory behaviors. And when the natural vegetation of forests is replaced by non-native plants, the resources that support birds, butterflies, and other local wildlife become exceedingly scarce. As wildlife gardeners, we can serve a useful role in helping to bridge the gap for wildlife in areas like the Piedmont, which is growing rapidly. By providing wildlife-friendly habitat, we help minimize the disruption for animals trying to meet life's basic necessities, including food, water, and shelter. And this is especially true in the wintertime, when food and water sources may be scarce and freezing temperatures punishing. So as temperatures drop this month, here are some ideas for making your backyard a place for some of the less adaptable wildlife. Thanks to Kim Schilling of Wild Birds Unlimited on Kildare Farm Road in Cary for helping construct these tips. 1. Consider leaving your Christmas tree out in the yard after the ornaments are removed. Birds and other small wildlife will welcome the chance to take shelter in its branches. Likewise, hang on to as many leaves as possible to provide mulch for the soil and shelter for small animals. and refrain from cleaning out the dead stalks and seed heads on flowers such as sunflowers, coneflowers, zinnias, and other seed-producing plants. 2. If squirrels are a problem at your bird feeder, consider serving hot meats, sunflower seeds soaked in hot chili peppers. The squirrels will stay away, but birds, which lack capacity for taste, will not know the difference. 3. Go ahead and clean out the birdhouse now, rather than waiting for spring, so that birds, and possibly other creatures, will have a place to escape the chill. 4. Offer mealworms as a high-protein source that provides a boost of energy in frigid temperatures. 5. Corn and peanuts are always welcomed by backyard wildlife, from squirrels to deer. 6. Build a brush pile in the backyard to provide cover for rabbits, hibernating reptiles, and ground-nesting birds. Start with a foundation of larger limbs and add smaller branches, brush, and grasses on top for a multi-layered effect. 7. Check to make sure that water sources, such as bird baths and small ponds, are not frozen over. Birds also need water for bathing, especially in winter. Clean feathers do better at insulating their sensitive bodies from the cold weather. And finally, 8. Add suet boxes to your bird feeding regimen. These treats are high in fat and often include other nutritious ingredients, such as berries and nuts. And from the Garden Smart e-newsletter, 5 Ultra Cold Hardy New Perennials for 2018 by Susan Martin from Proven Winners. Brrr, it's cold outside. In this coldest month of the year, let's take a look at 5 new perennials coming in spring that are cold hardy all the way down to zone 3. That's minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit. If you lose a few plants during this Arctic winter, consider replacing with these cold-loving beauties. Color spires, azure snow perennial salvia. Every perennial garden needs at least a few salvias, as they are a favorite of pollinators and bring much-needed color back into the garden after a long winter. Azure snow salvia blooms in late spring with plump wands of bicolor violet blue and white blossoms that stand at attention above the dark green basal foliage. Its minty fragrance keeps rabbits and deer from nibbling, but its flowers are a favorite of bees, butterflies, and hummingbirds. Grow azure snow salvia in a very sunny spot in the landscape or in containers. Once it's established, it prefers somewhat dry soil, so do not plant it in a spot watered frequently. Try pairing it with annual luscious lantanas, festival star baby's breath, or double play blue kazoo spiria. Height is 18 to 20 inch, and the spread 18 to 20 inch, and it's deer resistant. Next, Chantilly Lace Goat's Beard. Goat's Beard may be the most versatile perennial you've never heard of. That's because until now, there were very few forms available. This new, mid-sized, super hardy perennial grows and blooms well in both sun and shade conditions and pairs well with just about everything in the landscape. Chantilly Lace Goat's Beard looks a bit like a stilb, but it is easier to grow since it does not require constant watering. It also blooms earlier in the season, typically in late spring to early summer. Try pairing it with Shadowland Hostas, Dulce Coral Bells, and Opening Act Phlox in the landscape. Goat's Beard is a very low-maintenance perennial. You'll want to deadhead the spent blossoms once the plant is finished blooming, but no other pruning is required. Plant it in a flower border that is irrigated weekly along with the lawn. Feed it once in spring, and then watch it thrive the rest of the season. It grows to a height of 30 to 32 inches. The spread, 40 to 48 inches, and it's deer-resistant. Stand by me, bush clematis. You may be familiar with vining clematis, but did you know that some varieties grow more like upright perennials? The new Stand By Me is a great example. It grows about 3 feet tall and does not twine or vine. It appreciates the support of neighboring plants like storm cloud Emsonia or totem pole switchgrass once it's reached its full height and is full of flowers in late spring to early summer. Its blue, nodding, bell-shaped flowers often make a second appearance in later summer months, and attractive seed heads follow the blossoms. Stand By Me clematis grows well in sun and light shade and prefers a well-drained, slightly alkaline soil. Mulch or shade the roots with neighboring plants to keep them cool. Clematis likes to grow with its roots in the shade and its foliage in the sun. Pruning should not be necessary, but if needed, it can be done in late winter or early spring. The height is 34 to 38 inch, spread is 24 to 28 inch, and it's deer resistant. And Midnight Masquerade Beard Tongue. It's a pentstemon. If your winters are bone-chilling cold and your summers are hot and dry, or you lack sufficient irrigation, hardy pentstemons are the ideal perennials for your garden. Once established, these durable native prairie plants thrive in such conditions and offer showy blossoms that draw in the hummingbirds. The new Midnight Masquerade Beard Tongue is the total package with both attractive flowers and foliage. Tall spikes lined with lavender-purple flowers appear for several weeks in summer, and deep purple foliage keeps the garden colorful all season long. Try pairing it with Denim & Lace Russian Sage, Rock and Grow Sedums, and Prairie Winds Blue Paradise, little blue-stem grass in a sunny spot in your landscape. The height is 36 to 40 inch, spread 28 to 32 inch. And finally, Rock and Grow Pop Star and Superstar Stone Crop Sedums. This perfectly pink duo of low-growing, hardy sedums would look amazing planted in pockets on a stone wall, covering a sunny slope, or edging a pathway. An easy, low-maintenance combination for Zone 3 could include Popstar or Superstar planted with low-scape mound chokeberry and good vibration gold juniper. Succulents are extremely popular for their low water needs and fun foliage. Popstar and Superstar offer the added bonus of extreme cold hardiness and masses of flowers. Their glowing blossoms completely cover the foliage from late summer into fall, followed by attractive seed heads that keep them looking great until the snow flies. You'll often find bees and butterflies sipping their sweet nectar. Grow these plants in full sun, water, and feed them very infrequently once they are established. Lean, dry soils will result in more tightly mounded, colorful foliage and increased flower coverage. Their height is from 8 to 12 inches. Their spread from 20 to 24 inches. Now from the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, Gardening for Butterflies by Alice Yarborough. Gardening for butterflies is a suspenseful art, like holding a picnic and wondering if your invited guests will show up. Because butterflies are choosy insects, any gardener can have aphids, but red admirals, painted ladies, and tiger swallowtails insist upon certain amenities, such as sunshine and shelter from wind. To butterflies, Plants in a garden are more important than the design. They need flowers for nectar throughout the growing season. Luckily, many common annuals and perennials are top-notch nectar flowers. Native American species play an important role as host plants for hungry butterfly caterpillars. But most adult butterflies have cosmopolitan tastes, supping as readily on the nectar-filled flowers of exotic plants as natives. Butterflies seem especially attracted to gardens boasting generous patches of a given nectar flower. If you plant Jupiter's beard, don't settle for one or two plants. Try growing three or more patches of this especially popular nectar flowers, and watch the swallowtails drift from clump to clump. What's in my garden? Because I love old-fashioned cottage gardens, mine is filled with informal groups of plants of varied heights, including low growers spilling forth onto the garden's gravel paths. Grape hyacinths, pulmonaria, rockcress, azaleas, lilacs, wallflowers, and pinks furnish nectar early and mid-spring. Late spring through autumn, many butterfly plants bloom. Then June-blooming orchid primroses thickly interplanted with tall forget-me-nots. I use perennial alpine pinks, biennial sweet William, and self-sowing annual tank candy tuft to edge beds of Jupiter's beard and June-blooming yarrows such as pale yellow tegeria and moonshine. I planted tall perennial phlox and purple coneflowers behind the Jupiter's beard to provide color and nectar July and August. Joe Pye weed dominates one end of the garden. It waves its butterfly-laden flower heads for weeks in late summer. In front of it are patches of red bee balm and the tall hybrid yarrow, Coronation Gold. A large drift of purple-flowered anise hyssop completes the picture. Although the garden hosts a variety of nectar flowers, the butterflies concentrate when anise hyssop and Joe Pye weed bloom. Edging this bed are clumps of golden marjoram, oregano, rosy-flowered ice plant, and the little Mexican daisy. In September and October, purple hardy asters, backed with golden sneeze weed and tayo, T-A-I-Y-O, sunflowers, create a dazzling picture. In arid regions, I use drought-tolerant butterfly flowers. Asters, butterfly weed, coreopsis, fleabane, Jupiter's beard, lantana, lavender, sedum, verbena, and yarrow all thrive in dry, sunny sites. Make mud puddles. If your garden has a low, damp area, plant moisture lovers like the rosy-flowered swamp milkweed, Joe Pye weed, forget-me-nots, bee balm, and meadow sweet. Create a shallow puddle to attract swallowtails, blues, sulfurs, and other butterflies that enjoy drinking at mud puddles. They do so to obtain needed salts in their diets. A sprinkling of table salt and the addition of some manure will increase the puddle's appeal for butterflies. Salt harms plants, however, so use a plastic liner or locate the puddle away from your flower border. What about caterpillars? Butterfly gardeners should not use insecticides and herbicides. Many pesticides kill indiscriminately and so doom butterflies or their larvae. My advice? Don't fret too much about caterpillars chewing your prized plants. Natural pepper usually keep caterpillar populations under control. Also, the larvae of many butterflies feed only on certain plants and trees. Mostly, I welcome the occasional presence of butterfly caterpillars in my garden, sometimes carrying one indoors along with a spray of its food plant, so that I can observe the miracle of metamorphosis. West Coast ladies sometimes lay eggs on the leaves of ornamental mallows. Painted ladies, which instinctively lay their eggs on thistle plants, also find an acceptable substitute in the hairy leaves of borage. Spying dozens of painted lady caterpillars on your borage plants does not mean the end result will be a crowd of butterflies emerging from their cocoons in your garden. Such collections of juicy caterpillar morsels are handy food marts for wasps and hungry birds. Now for the Triangle Gardener. Yes, you can grow tomatoes in winter, by Forrest Grant, hydroponics manager at Atlantic Gardening Company. Hydroponics is a hot trend in the gardening world these days. Growing hydroponically brings the garden year-round, whether you're in an apartment or have acres of space. It also allows you to grow disease-prone vegetables like tomatoes, where you can count on less disease, faster growth, and higher yields than you would achieving growing them in soil. Hydroponics has a lot of fancy jargon, making growing indoors seem a lot more challenging than it really is. Let's break it down to the basics. What is hydroponics? Hydroponics does away with soil and instead uses growing mediums such as vermiculite, rock wool, gravel, coconut coir, and perlite. Plants grown hydroponically are fertilized directly through a nutrient-rich water solution. Since the plants do not have to waste energy looking for nutrients in soil, root expansion will be smaller than soil-grown plants. Thus, it's possible and even advantageous to have multiple plants side by side in a hydroponic system, producing a much higher yield per square foot than growing in soil. Growing tomatoes. Rock wool is the most common medium for starting hydroponically grown tomatoes. With a consistency like cotton candy, these cubes are produced from basalt rock and chalk. Because rock wool holds water amazingly well, it allows plants to absorb nutrients more efficiently. You'll want to start your tomato plants indoors from seed. Introducing soil-grown seedlings to a hydroponic system increases your risk for plant disease. To sow seeds, soak small rock wool cubes in water. Then simply put several tomato seeds in each cube. Place the cubes in a nursery tray with a humidity dome. You won't need lighting until the seeds sprout, but keep them in a relatively warm spot. Keep the cubes moist during germination. Once your seeds sprout, they'll need a lot of light. The best way to achieve this is to invest in a grow light. There are several options available, including LED and compact fluorescents. Water as needed during this stage of growth. Once roots have grown through the small rockwood cube, transfer the small cube into a larger, water-soaked rock wool cube. Wait again for roots to take hold. Then it's time for your plants to begin receiving nutrients for vegetative growth. At this stage, you'll need to transplant your rock wool cubes into a bucket system like water farm, root spa, or auto pot that uses another growing medium such as clay pebbles. Clay pebbles provide aeration and drainage that will promote healthy growth. Each bucket is fitted with a pump that will ebb and flow nutrient-rich water to your tomato's roots on a timer, ensuring the plant gets optimal fertilization exactly when it needs it. Grow tents. Tomatoes need 8 hours of complete darkness each night. That's where grow tents come in. They can be closed at night to block any light that may reach your plants, but are also lined with reflective material on the inside that will maximize the light reaching your tomatoes from your lamps. Lighthouse and Gorilla are two of the most common brands of grow tents and come in a variety of sizes. Transitioning to hydroponic growing allows the grower to produce in a controlled environment with higher yields and productivity. We hope you try growing tomatoes indoors this winter. It's a lot of fun, and the results taste delicious. And in garden events, there's a propagation workshop January the 27th, 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. Learn how to asexually propagate plants from the JCRA's collections via hardwood cuttings in this hands-on workshop. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. This happens at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum at the North Carolina State University in Raleigh. For more information, call 919-515-3132. 919-515-3132, or go to their site, jcra.ncsu.edu. And a grafting workshop and scion exchange, January the 27th, from 12 noon until 2 p.m. Grafting is the process of attaching one variety of plant to a different variety of plant, such as a Fuji apple onto a Gala apple tree. Includes a grafting demonstration that will show you how to graft and what plant combinations will be successful. Supplies are provided, or you can bring your own, and this is free. Seeds, Durham is providing it. So go to the site, trianglefruitandnutgrowers.weebly.com, or suzemsh@gmail.com. And an orchid open house on February the 3rd. Seminars, sales, and giveaways, plus the Triangle Orchid Society will be judging the first ever orchid competition. Bring a blooming orchid and enter for a chance to win a gift card, complimentary tea and cakes while you shop. This will happen at the Atlantic Gardening Company, located in Raleigh. You can go to their website, atlanticgardening.com. And a garden soils class on February the 3rd from 8:30 a.m. until 12:30 p.m. Learn about basic soil principles and how you can use that understanding to improve your garden soils, properly prepare garden beds, reduce fertilizer inputs, compost, and maximize growth in your gardens. Bryce Lane, Professor Emeritus in CSU, will speak. There's a fee, and you have to pre-register, and this will happen at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum, located in Raleigh. You can call 919-515-3132. 919-515-3132 for more information. And a pruning demo, February 3rd, 11 a.m. Learn how to prune with the pros. It's free, but you need to pre-register. This will happen at the Garden Hut in Fuquay Varina. Call 919-552-0590. 919-552-0590. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until the next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.